Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey everyone, welcome. Travis Johnson, the Nonprofit Architect here. Here today with Maya McNulty. Hop on over to patreon.com/nonprofitarchitect. Check out my behind the scenes first interviews that I don't share on my podcast with people. And you can see how the process goes when I actually meet someone for the first time and the things that we talk about. Maya McNulty is an award-winning cable lifestyle program host. She's helped people raise millions of dollars over the last 7 years. And we call her the fundraising maverick. Maya, how are you today?
Hey, welcome to me on your podcast. It's been so exciting to follow you on your journey and sharing fundraising secrets on your page as well, the Nonprofit Architect. And this is exciting to be able to talk about fundraising secrets on your podcast. So thank you so much for having me be a guest.
Hey, I'm glad to have you. I'm just surprised you said yes. I'm not anyone special. I just love interviewing people and getting to know people and seeing what they can do to help startup nonprofits. I know you've got your book, Fundraising Secrets, out on Amazon. I'll have a link in the show notes. Hop on over, pick up a copy of her book. But today, I think we're going to talk about the step-by-step of how to actually create an event. But before we get into that, Maya, tell us a little bit of something about yourself and what you do with Fundraising Secrets.
Well, thank you. I want to share a little backstory with people because your audience doesn't know me, and I'd like for them to get to know me a little better. And so I am a podcaster as well. My podcast is called Fundraising Secrets. And before that, I wrote a book called My Favorite Quotes for Entrepreneurs, an Interactive Guide to Inspiration and Empowerment. And the reason I wrote this book was because for 10 years, I had owned a Curves for Women franchise, and my franchise actually almost made me and my family go bankrupt, and the business model had failed. And so in that book, My Favorite Quotes for Entrepreneurs, that has 7 principal business exercises and then a 30-day journal to keep you inspired and empowered, because those days were dark for me, and I actually started to go into depression and anxiety. It took some time off to reinvent myself, and it brought me back to figuring out what I wanted to be and who was Maya creating to be. And prior to this, writing Fundraising Secrets and getting the podcast Fundraising Secrets going and all the other things that go with Fundraising Secrets, when I was pregnant with my daughter back in springtime of 2000, I was going just for a normal checkup with a doctor, and my husband was sitting on the chair. I was laying on the bed, and I was having complications, not knowing that they were so horrific, these complications. And I was told by the doctor to abort my baby. And as an entrepreneur, not really having a lot of money or insurance, entrepreneurs, we don't have the best insurance, right? We're always capped out and it's so expensive. So we take the bottom tier of the insurances. And so I had to seek the help to try to get a second and third opinions because I wanted to save the life of my child and myself. And, I seek the help of nonprofits. And so when I was reinventing myself, when I was almost on the verge of bankruptcy, I realized that how I wanted to go back and, this part of my life to help nonprofits. So I wrote a book called Fundraising Secrets, and it's a step-by-step book on how to be able to fundraise fast. It's the underground playbook for nonprofits to be able to fundraise fast, grow sponsors, build a massive donor list, upsurge donations while impacting the world. And so here I am today and helping hundreds of people and organizations to fundraise. I personally, in the past 7 years, have helped over 7 different organizations, and we've raised millions of dollars doing that. Those are some of the key studies that are in the book as well.
That is amazing. That is quite the journey from starting the entrepreneur, talking about your daughter, and it's wonderful that you bring that up, and then what you're doing to help nonprofits actually gain traction and actually generate funds is huge, because we all have these missions we want to accomplish, but if we don't have any money to do it, it doesn't really mean a whole lot.
You're right. A lot of times nonprofits start out because they want to impact lives and they want to make a difference in their community. One of the problems, though, they're doing is because they don't have the proper training or even the budget to get started. They just have a passion, a desire to do something bigger than themselves. And they lack the training in a well-defined support system. And so Fundraising Secrets, I created the book to help them to fundraise so that they can have more effective and lucrative fundraisers, because fundraising, as you know, is one of the most important things of running an organization. Just like a volunteer is the lifeblood of an organization, you have this big vision and legacy for yourself to be able to grow your organization and passion. But if you don't have the funds, you're right, you cannot make it happen. And so I teach how to do this in Fundraising Secrets.
That's phenomenal. And it's such a great platform. But you're here today to talk about event planning and the step-by-step on how to create a successful event. And I know all of our startup nonprofits want to know how on earth they actually accomplish something like this. Let her rip. Tell us the step one, the step-by-step of how to get this done.
All right. So I don't know how much I can deep dive into it in 20 minutes, but here's the skinny of it all. I start with a format, a framework. Right. And once we build out this framework, we can plug key influencers into where they need to be so that they can use their superpowers in order to help build this lucrative fundraiser. Because if you need social media management, but you're putting somebody that doesn't have that skill and talent, that's going to flop on you. If you're needing to fundraise and someone doesn't have good communication skills, they're not going to be good on the phone in order to close sales. They're not good at closing sales. If they're not good at building teams, then they're not going to be good at getting a dream team built for you. So we like to teach you how to, in our four quadrants, how to build a dream team. And that is usually consists of a donor. And the reason why we have a donor is because they already are ones that have contributed to your cause in the past and believe in your mission. Also, two community leaders, because the community leaders are the ones who come with diverse backgrounds and different congregations of people, circle of influences. And once they have different circle of influences, that means your team has grown. We also like to have your steering committee, a person that's in charge of either marketing or the executive director, someone in your organization, because if we have to write a check to a venue, we want to make sure that we have that availability and we don't have to go back and forth to the board members. We also like to invite a board member to be on our dream team, because then we don't have to regurgitate exactly what is it that we're doing. So we have somebody in each department to help us for accountability and to make sure that everything stays on track. Once we form our dream team, we form out a value ladder. A value ladder helps to position us exactly to the next stage of where we're going to find our fundraising dollars and who's in charge of those fundraising dollars. So just like a for-profit business, let me walk it through for you so you can understand how this works. So let me walk it through for you with a dentist and how a dentist would use a value ladder for a for-profit business. Now, a for-profit business would do a lead magnet, and you can find a lead magnet on TV or in the newspaper, or now if you're listening to the podcast, you'll see that there, and you can click on it to take advantage of, say, a free teeth cleaning and an x-ray. So when a dentist invites you in for a teeth cleaning and you take advantage of that, they'll probably discover that you have a cavity. And if you have a cavity, then you're going to want to get that filled. So now you can see how they're going to start to ascend you up the value ladder. After you have your cavity filled and your teeth clean, you probably still discover that you have yellow teeth, and you're not going to want to leave the dentist with yellow teeth. So now they're selling you teeth whitening for you to have whiter teeth. And after that, then you realize, wow, you discovered a few of your teeth are crooked, and now you don't want to have crooked teeth. I know I don't. So I would probably opt to get the braces or the Invisaligns and see the Ascension model. So that's the same proven model that most dentists would use. And we've all taken advantage of going up the value ladder without knowing that that's the value ladder to ascend to the client. Just like McDonald's would invite you in for a cheeseburger, but upsell you for fries and a shake or a Coke, and then maybe sell you gift cards. It's the same concept. Now, how does a value ladder work for a nonprofit? It works like this. So the lowest ticket entry is coming in as a volunteer. Volunteers can fulfill many different roles. They can fulfill butts in the seats, fans in the stands. They can actually come to a live event. It's a low ticket, right? Just like a lead magnet. But then you get this opportunity to come to the next thing in your organization, whether being on a steering committee or an ambassador or community leader, donor, sponsor, honorary chair. And I like to go all the way up to an alumni with an organization, because you might see that key player. You know, we all went to high school or college, and we still want to be part of that congregation. So we have been labeled as an alumni, and that means we still fit in somehow. And when you get older and you age out of an organization, you still are passionate about that organization and you still want to look for those key players. However, maybe you don't want to be a community leader and look for all that fundraising, but they could probably see somebody, and they just rinse and repeat the whole process of volunteer and then going up the value ladder for steering committee, ambassador, community leader. So just rinses and repeats the whole thing. Now, the most important part of all that is not necessarily the dream team or even the value ladder, although they're essential. It's also building out a timeline. A timeline for an event is the most crucial, because not only does it give you dates and deadlines and actionable steps, and they're hard deadlines so that you can stay on track and you can be able to fulfill the time that you need to have everything done. So timeline is really important. And the timeline also gauges everyone else who's involved in the organization for the one particular thing, the one fundraiser, not 10 different ones, but the one only one that you're working on. It gives actionable steps so that they can feel accomplished and that they can get the task done on time.
Now, I know our pre-interview, you were talking about the problem with some people doing too many fundraisers, too many events. And I definitely understand that. I've seen it where they do one a year, which maybe not enough. I've seen people that do 10 a year. In your experience, what's kind of the sweet spot that you're looking to do fundraisers throughout a year, like two or three? What do you think?
I feel that to do them effectively, and the way that we teach you in Fundraising Secrets Mastery, is to do at least two. One is a signature one, and one is just to keep the ball rolling, to let people know that you're out there, that you haven't died, right? Because a nonprofit, there's so many of you, then some of you will go out of business. But if you're just, you know, first quarter, maybe try to do something between the first 6 months and the second 6 months, do something. I would say no more than two, but make them signature. I know someone is trying to do like a bowling event, and then they're trying to do a golf event, and then a gala event, and then a fashion show event. Like, they're trying to do so many different events, and all of them are spreading you way too thin. You're burning out. The leadership isn't there. You're not getting the volunteers. Your donors are dying. Like, you're having all this. And then attitude starts to form with different personality types. And this is a new world, too, of tech and automation for nonprofits. And there's a better way to do it. And Fundraising Secrets, I give you a well-defined support system by following a step-by-step guide on how to create a lucrative fundraiser. And the last step too, as well, after realizing how many events you should have, there's sponsorship. And so, you know, perhaps they're thinking, I can't get rid of that because this is our core thing. And, you know, I do a fundraising audit and it's a checklist. And so you need to look at programs that have worked and programs that don't. So you need to either eliminate or scale them back or get them, refurbish them, right? Redo them to a higher scale, really make them signature. And once you have something that's signature, people will start to look forward to that because it was such a great experience and a great event. So sponsorship ask, being creative in your sponsorship ask is actually one of the four quads that I just spoke about. So we have your dream team, building your value ladder, creative timeline, and structure, because structure gives you freedom, and also the sponsorship ask. And now you can create several different sponsorship asks. And the reason I say do two events is because you could also create a dual sponsorship ask from your one fundraiser. Whereas if you did one in the springtime, you know, or even between first and second quarter, and then between third and fourth quarter, do your second one, you could actually piggyback off your very first one to say, this is our dual, you also get this and you get this, mm-hmm. right? So you get to do two sponsors, you get, you know, for that one sponsorship ask, being creative. And now, when people are using sponsorships, sometimes what they do is they just go to Google and they just get the template off of Google, which is the reason why you're not getting sponsorship dollars. It's the language that you use. Yes. So people are using red, white, and blue, silver, gold, and bronze. It shows a lack of creativity. It doesn't speak to the organization's language. And that is the biggest problem, is the language. And that's why you're not getting the fundraising dollars. You can't relate to it. Like Apple, you can relate to Apple and the products, right? How beautiful they are, and the technology and the sleekness. So what is it, the language that you speak? How does it make you feel emotionally?
Oh, yeah. You have to maintain consistency in branding, right? This is the nonprofit architect. So the things that I talk about with my clients behind the scenes is building their blueprint, laying their foundation, and then, you know, building and designing that dream of the future. We use that architecture language and the things that we talk about throughout all the mailers I do, all the different contacts I have. I use the same branding with my hat, mm-hmm. my logo, my colors, my structure, all those things. It's consistency that matters. The reason that there's a discourse in America about chain restaurants, right? But chain restaurants, they have done the thing. They have stripped down to what their core is. They've created this blueprint that they can, you know, manufacture over and over and over again. And let's say you're not a Chili's fan. A Chili's you wouldn't go to on a Tuesday night in your local area. But you're out in some new area. You're out visiting some friends on the coast. And you want something that you know what you're going to get when you order it. And you're like, oh, there's a Chili's right over there. I know exactly what I'm going to get. Because you go there and you get the consistency. You get the same greeting. You get the same appetizers, the same perfect margarita. You get your quesadillas, your fajitas, or wherever you get it, Chili's. But you know exactly what you're going to get. And that's what your donors and the people that you talk to and the people that you're looking for, they need to hear that consistency throughout your message, whether it's an email ask or you're going live on video or you're meeting them for lunch.
Absolutely. You definitely have to be consistent. You have to be creative. You have to give value. So, you know, when you're writing a creative sponsorship ask, they have to see the value in there. People write checks to people, right? They write checks to the emotional tie that they have. So, for example, we did $100,000 for NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, just this past spring. And how we did that was we spoke the language of NAMI. So wellness, recovery, hope. You could see that, right? Impact. And because people could see that, they wrote the checks to that. They could feel that emotion. They could feel what hope is about. They can feel what the impact is. They can feel recovery, right? They could see it. And so that's one of the things. We spoke their language. Now, my daughter is a sophomore in college. And when she was a sophomore in high school, we spoke the language because she played soccer. And when you first start out in soccer, she was a ball girl, and then freshman, then JV, then varsity, right? So they could see and go through that whole experience of the life of that sponsorship. And they saw that where they could be and what level they could be. Now, many of her donors, because for the project she was doing was painting a gym for the Boys and Girls Club while she was teaching soccer to inner city youth, was they could see the impact of the youth and sportsmanship and leadership and teamwork, but they also saw the environment that the kids were in once that money was able to use to paint the gym. So they could see it when the kids were playing soccer, when they were being a ball girl or a JV player, and they all wanted to be a varsity level, right? No one wanted to write a check because they were a ball girl. They wanted to be a varsity player. So I mean, it's just being strategic and smart. Like, do you want to be a ball girl? Do you want to be a varsity player, right? Do you want your name as a ball girl on your poster or the banner, or do you want to be called a varsity player? Right.
I do not want to be a ball girl. I want to be varsity.
Exactly. So talking the language, speaking the language, and that would work for any sport really. Right. So, I mean, if you're like football, if it's like the water boy, or do you want to be the varsity player? Right. Do you want to be a quarterback, or do you want to be the kicker? Right. So it's like, who do you want to be? And that gets them to think like, oh, well, maybe I don't want to be like the water cooler, you know? It's like, so that's one of the tricks of how to write an effective sponsorship ask, is speaking the language so that the the donors can actually like relate to it. And then you are able to have more impact in that. So that's one, those are the four quadrants that we talk about in Fundraising Secrets. And there's more, like going through a cadency report. The report is just a snapshot of everything that's happening within the organization. You know, they certainly can follow me on Fundraising Secrets. I do a lot of videos and talk about step by steps, and I break it all down for your audience. So they definitely can follow me on social media and learn how to do all these different steps. So that would be really cool. And they can definitely get the book. I know you're going to drop the link there. So thank you so much for doing that.
Well, I got to drop the link. It matters, right? What has been the most interesting and fun fundraiser that you've been a part of?
I love them all because they all have been something different. Something for schools, for kids, inner city youth, girls, boys. One of my favorites was working, and my daughter has done them all with me, but Special Olympics, we were able to do a campaign first time event. We created a fashion show for them. I studied fashion merchandising and design in college, and I was able to study in London, Paris, and Rome. And so I wanted to bring that part of my life into it as well. And my daughter's absolutely gorgeous, so she looked great on the runway. We were able to do $36,000 in 6 weeks. Almost $37,000 in 6 weeks. And we tested it again the following year because Special Olympics always wins a 2-year contract to come to do the state games in certain states or areas. And New York won it for 2 years back to back. So we did the show again and we were able to do $47,000 the second year. And had they continued to do it, it would just increase and increase because of the framework is what helps you to do it, to raise the money. And we taught the framework, and then those are case studies in the book as well. Yeah, so the impact of that, almost $70,000, was able to put like about 120, 30 kids on the field, about $900 a pop, I believe. So that helped about over 100 kids to go on the field. So I thought that was really special. Another one that we did was NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. That was a 12-week campaign. We did $100,000. And that was for advocacy and training, and also for families, and then recovery. So oftentimes they're just looking at the problem, right? They're not looking at the solution. Recovery was one of the solutions. And so this money was able to help families that were going through recovery to make sure that their children or themselves or aunts and uncles, whoever they were looking to help, stay in recovery. So that was part of the funds for that. So that was really important. So they all have something special, and it works for churches, schools, kids organizations, homeless. Right now I'm working on foster care for another organization. So just testing it in different markets, but they've all been passionate. It would be unfair to have to pick one.
Well, you know, fundraisers are different. I've been to one where it was like an 80s throwback theme and there was people with mullets having a good time. I've been to one where they had the bow tie gala and everyone was dressed up, but they had a dunk tank, and the dunk tank raised like $15,000 that evening. I've heard of one where they did like an adult prom, but because they're all adults, you know, the punch starts out spiked and they have the really corny photos and all this stuff. So there's just all these different ways to raise money. There's no best way or worst way to do it. But if you're out there listening, find the thing that works for you. When I was in the Shine Foundation, we did concerts. We did one fundraiser a year, and it was concerts. He had a crew come in. They let us talk beforehand. We give an award to the artist, and then we raised money, collected envelopes, and that was it. One a year was enough to sustain us for what we needed to do. Now, that's not going to work for everybody, but you got to find what works for you. And if you get the right framework, like Maya's offering, you're going to be able to be successful year after year and build and grow.
Yeah, I want to add to this as well, Travis, because one of the things too, after you've done all this work, it is really essential to have a meet and greet party so that everyone is on the same page to get to know each other and build a team. I played volleyball in high school, and so I always remember my daughter played soccer. So I always remember just having that camaraderie with your teammates, right? Treating them as a team, and then having a recap party to not only thank your community, but thanking your sponsors and your donors and keeping them engaged by thanking. So one of the most essential, yeah, we talked about the dream team and building a value ladder and the timelines and the sponsorship ask, and then all the different themes that we can have. But it's so essential to thank your community it doesn't matter how well you brand. If you don't thank people and appreciate them and show them how you appreciate them, they're going to forget about you and go to the next guy. So if you have one or two signature events, nurture whoever comes into your ecosystem in your congregation, treat them well and invite them to come in, have an open house, have an appreciation day. Continue to, you don't have to have all these events over and over again, but you do have to just nurture them so that when you do have an ask, so that you're not asking all the time and getting them burnt out from donating checks to you. you like nurture them, build relationships, have them come into your world, and maybe they'll be that community leader or influencer or donor that's going to see that key player to come into your organization. So you don't have to work as hard, but smart. And it is a new world of getting donations. And so if you're afraid of tech, if you're afraid of, scraping your old list or even building a new list, nurture the list that you have and let that be your light to guide you to the next opportunity. So thank your community. That is probably the most important thing that I will say when it comes to events.
Oh, absolutely. My interview with Patrick Kirby. He's another fundraising guru. He's got tons of energy, love him to death. His big thing is if you don't know the name of their dog, you can't ask them for more than $1,000. If the last time you talked to them, you were asking them for money, well, then this contact here, you should be thanking them and not asking for money. Everyone's got their tips, their tricks, and how to maintain donor relations and all the things that are really valuable for building a relationship. But definitely. Check out Maya McNulty's book on Amazon. What is the best way for people to get a hold of you?
You know, I would love if they would follow me on Fundraising Secrets on the either on the podcast, Fundraising Secrets. It's available on all the RSS channels, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google. And also go to my page, Fundraising Secrets, on Facebook and follow me there. I am maxed out on friends naturally. I'm not taking any friends anymore. Unless somebody makes some room for you. If you're a nonprofit and really want to connect with that, you can definitely send me an inbox there. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter. I'm on all the social media pages. Hey, I've even started to venture into TikTok. so we'll have to see. You might catch me there. But definitely at Maya McNulty, and then you can follow me. But I'd love if you'd follow me on Fundraising Secrets on Facebook.
Thanks a lot, Maya. Action-packed value episode. Loved having you on. Thank you so much.
You got it. Thanks so much, Travis. It was great to meet you and connect with you and sharing the story of Fundraising Secrets on your podcast. I really look forward to hearing it and connecting with your audience. Have a great day, everybody.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.